Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of the first episode, a conversation with Dean Susan Fournier, where she answers the question at the heart of the show.
Miguel Rodriguez has lived in Camden, New Jersey for 40 years. He knows everybody.
Everywhere I go, someone knows me.
For the past few weeks, Miguel's been using that community knowledge to fight the pandemic. He's been going door to door, handing out information about COVID-19, like where to get tested or where to get mental health support. And he's talking to his neighbors about getting vaccinated.
And the feedback that I get from them is that they don't trust the vaccine because, you know, when they watch the news every day, you know, they say something different about it, right? They even saying that on the news that that if you get the vaccine, right, you can still get the COVID, right? You know, you can still get it, right? So a lot of them is like real hesitant and saying to themselves, then why should I even bother taking a vaccine if I can still get it?
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point. And if there's ever been a recent disease where people should be clamoring to get vaccinated, it's COVID. And yet, many Americans are not. So today we're going to talk about why and how to build trust in COVID vaccines. But first, let's acknowledge that there are millions of Americans who do want the vaccines. Botched federal and state distribution plans are making it difficult for people to access it. And that's a huge problem. Because early on in the pandemic, epidemiologists estimated that for the United States to reach herd immunity, 70% of the population would need to get vaccinated. By mid-December, Dr. Anthony Fauci, head of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, had raised that estimate. Here he is on CNBC just a few weeks ago.
I say between 75 and 80, 85% of the population. If we get that, we would develop an umbrella of immunity that would be able to protect even the vulnerables who have not been vaccinated or those in which the vaccine has not been effective. You can get that kind of immunity with that percentage of people.
That 85% is roughly 280 million Americans.
Which is the reason why we're being very enthusiastic in reaching out to the community to convince people of the importance of getting vaccinated, not only for their own safety, but for that of their family, as well as for society in general.
But consider this, as much as 25% of Americans are uncertain about getting a COVID vaccine. 15% say they are totally unwilling to get it. That's according to a Kaiser Family Foundation survey last month. Back in Camden, New Jersey, County Health Officer Pascal Nwoko knew that in order to get more people comfortable with the COVID vaccine, the department would have to initiate conversations about vaccination long before they asked people to sign up for their first shots. So Dr. Nwoko says the Camden County Department of Health launched an outreach program in October before any vaccines were even approved.
We sent ambassadors in the community to find out if that community will accept the vaccines. So what we found out is that there's vaccine hesitancy in that community. So we intensified effort with the faith-based organizations and with all our partners, healthcare partners in Camden City, to make sure that people in that city and other areas of the county will accept the vaccine.
There's a reason Dr. Nwoko wanted Camden residents to hear first from people they already know and trust.
They think you are the government. Of course, you want to sell something to them that might harm them. So we go with the faith-based people that speak to them on a weekly basis in church or daily basis, as the case may be. We also go to the community leaders.
People like Miguel Rodriguez.
Those people they know. So with that and knocking on the door, they see you all the time. Like, the example I always give is when we are at the lobby of a building, somebody sees you at the lobby distributing leaflets, flyers, and they walk past. The next day they see you and you say hello, they walk past. The third day you knock on the door and they say, oh, I see you on the ground. What were you guys doing there? So that is a good way to engage the community and to reduce vaccine hesitancy in the community.
Miguel got involved in the county's initiative through his role on a community advisory committee for the Camden Coalition of Healthcare Providers. He remembers a recent conversation he had with a woman who was reluctant about the COVID vaccine. So he switched tacks and instead talked to her about how successful childhood vaccines have been for diseases like measles.
She stopped and she thought about it for a second. She said, you know something, you're right. But first, what I'm going to do is when I first see like the 100,000 people get it, right, and see how they react, and then I'll get it. So I said, okay, you know, but at least you're going to get it, you know. And that makes me, you know, it's worth me coming out here and talking to y'all about it, that, you know, I can convince you in some way to get it.
Dr. Nwoko says he empathizes with people who have questions. Here's a brand new vaccine developed in record time in the midst of a public health disaster. Can they trust it? He also says that 92% of Camden's residents are people of color, and they can point to well-documented instances of racism in American healthcare. But still, Dr. Nwoko is hopeful that if built carefully and respectfully, trust can be viral too.
The good news is that it's out in the community. People of color and minorities are taking this vaccine, and we haven't seen a lot of adverse reactions to this vaccine around the country. So with that, we hope that the hesitancy will reduce in our community.
Since October, the Camden County Health Department and its partners have knocked on 52,000 doors. And at every home he's visited, Miguel Rodriguez leaves the folks he's talked to with this final thought.
I talk to a lot of individuals and I say, well, like, how important do you feel that Black Lives Matter? How strongly do you feel about the Black Lives Matter? And they say, oh, I feel strongly about that. So why wouldn't you take the vaccine?
Dr. Pascal Nwoko says the true test comes later this year, when hopefully COVID vaccines will be more widely available.
We would know down the line if that the people we spoke to, if we change our minds or not, but we don't know yet.
That's Dr. Pascal Nwoko in Camden County, New Jersey. 52,000 doors they've knocked on there to give people more information about the COVID vaccine. Similar efforts, though, are not happening consistently nationwide. And so we want to explore this hour about what it's going to take, again, to build trust in this potentially pandemic-stopping vaccine. And joining me now is Dr. Georges Benjamin. He's executive director of the American Public Health Association, and he joins us from Washington. Dr. Benjamin, welcome to On Point.
Hi, glad to be here.
So first of all, tell us, what do you think? I mean, you heard that story from Camden County, New Jersey there. They're doing a great job at least reaching out to people. But across the country, what do you think are the primary obstacles to building trust in the COVID vaccine? And I ask that because I just want to remind folks that we do have some polling numbers. I mentioned those Kaiser numbers earlier that say, you know, at least 25% of people are uncertain. 15% of people are dead set against it.
Yeah, a lot of it's due to misinformation, the lack of trust. Around safety and efficacy. There are people still that believe that the vaccine causes lots of problems. There's still people that believe the vaccine can actually give you the disease. And so we have to really get out there and do a lot better job of educating. And Mikhail was just right. You have to be persistent and you have to talk to people where they are.
So why do you think that education hasn't happened more consistently across the country?
Well, you know, this has been a vaccine that we have been talking about for over a year, and the public's gotten a lot of mixed messages. We just have not had a national communication strategy in order to make sure people are aware of the benefits of the vaccine. And they've also done something that we've never really done before. You know, most Americans have never watched the development on their TV screens and through the media of the vaccine. You know, they just always assumed the vaccine is here. And then we market the vaccine and say, okay, we've developed this new amazing scientific tool, and now we want you to take it. But in this case, people have actually watched the debate around this vaccine for many, many months. And it's been very confusing.
Very confusing. So, but we've been through other epidemics or pandemics that were well covered or exhaustively covered, at least over time, in the media. How does COVID differ in terms of people's responses to treatments or vaccines?
Well, in many cases, we already had a vaccine for that. So when we had H1N1, that was an influenza vaccine. And we have influenza that comes every year. So while the vaccine was new in terms of the strain, it wasn't an entirely new vaccine. And the other thing that's happened, of course, is that the whole response to this outbreak has been politicized. And so it's not surprising that this has gotten caught up into that. And I got to tell you, finally, the idea of Operation Warp Speed, unless you're a Trekkie like me, that was probably not the right name to use for the development, because it gave people the misperception that we were cutting corners in the development of the vaccine. Of course, that was not the case whatsoever.
Mm. Fellow Trekkie here, by the way, Dr. Benjamin. But to that point, though, I wonder how much communication, what should it have been different in the past 10 months? Because the fact is that we have never had a vaccine developed this fast in human history. So even if you had perfect scientific communication through the whole process, non-politicized, would it have made a difference in terms of people being a little askance at the speed at which these new treatments were developed?
Well, people are always going to be a bit skeptical. But if you think about it, if we had explained to people why, for example, the vaccine was able to be produced so quickly, that would have made a big difference. And for example, one of the reasons for that is that even though this vaccine has been produced in really record speed, we started doing this vaccine science way back with the first SARS outbreak many, many, many years ago. So this is not entirely new. And I think the other thing that people didn't really understand is the challenges that they've had with this new vaccine and how it actually works.
Yeah, well, you know, we're going to explore exactly that when we come back from a break. We're talking this hour about how to build trust in the COVID vaccines. We'll be back. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken?, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. These days, it's hard to ignore the debate over the role business should play in society.
There's crescendo around profit, period. Is profit bad? Is capitalism evil? These themes are out there.
Is this criticism of business warranted? And if so, how do we fix it? Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of the first episode of the Is Business Broken podcast.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We are talking this hour about how to build trust and reduce hesitancy around COVID vaccinations. I'm joined today by Dr. Georges Benjamin. He's the executive director of the American Public Health Association. We're going to hear from a couple of more people here in just a minute. But Dr. Benjamin, I want to play a little bit of a voicemail that we received from an On Point listener. This is Maggie Hadley West from New Orleans, and she is skeptical of the COVID vaccines.
Many other millions of Americans, I haven't had a great experience with the medical industry, taking bad drugs for many, many years because of a monopoly on the business of an illness that I have. And through the entire pandemic, nobody has been talking about any of the natural remedies that would have been helpful. So for myself, I am going to sit back and wait and see what happens.
So, Dr. Benjamin, I wanted to play that for you specifically because Maggie there pointing to her already not great experiences with the American healthcare system. Not an uncommon feeling. How much do you think that's contributed to the hesitancy people have around COVID vaccines?
Oh, it's a big problem because, you know, if you don't have the trust with your provider, if you've had a bad experience with the healthcare system, why should you trust us? And so we, you know, generally have to do a much better job with our bedside manner and just engaging patients in different ways. You know, if you treat people not like their customers and really treat them like they're kind of discretionary, and that happens in a lot of places, unfortunately, then they're going to have these bad experiences. And you really have to treat people with respect all throughout the healthcare system.
Mm. Now, you know, I'm not going to say that people in public health are acting surprised that there's so much hesitancy around a COVID vaccine. I mean, I feel like flu shots every year, you have this same challenge, et cetera. But I'm just wondering, say back in January or February at the onset of this pandemic, would you have expected, you know, so much concern over a potential COVID vaccine?
I think we didn't have a sense of the scope of this outbreak. I think everybody saw this. Oh, this is SARS-2. Yeah, it's going to be like SARS-1. We'll be able to get our hands around it very quickly. If we need a vaccine, okay, but most likely we'll just be able to test, contact, trace, and control our way out of this like we did with SARS-1. But we've frankly been chasing this epidemic the whole time and not really forward-leaning into testing or contact tracing or vaccinations.
All right. Well, Dr. Benjamin, hang on here for just a second because I want to introduce a couple of other people into the conversation. Ben Brock Johnson and Amory Sievertson. They are co-hosts of Endless Thread. It's a podcast from our home station here of WBUR and Reddit. And Endless Thread produced a 5-part series about vaccine hesitancy in 2019. The series is called Infectious. We've got a link to it at onpointradio.org. And by the way, it won a national award, a national Edward R. Murrow Award for Best News Series. Ben Brock Johnson, welcome to you.
Thank you for having me, Meghna. It's great to be here. And I think I'm your third Star Trek fan to join the chat. So
We're going to add another one. Amory, welcome to you.
Hi there, Meghna.
Okay. So you've been listening to what Dr. Benjamin has had to say about the big picture, the big public health picture here, and the challenges with vaccine hesitancy around COVID treatments. How much does that echo or sound familiar in terms of what you learned in your long investigation into the origins of this kind of hesitancy in the United States? Amory, I'll start with you.
Oh, so much, Meghna, so much. You know, listening to Dr. Benjamin there, I was thinking about something that Dr. Paul Offit, who's the head of the Vaccine Education Center at Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, said to us. And it was this idea that, yes, there is a debate over vaccines in this country and beyond, but it's a cultural debate. It's not a scientific debate. The science is settled. And, you know, that doesn't sit well with everyone, this idea of, oh, the science is settled. You know, it makes people feel like they're not being let in on the science because we don't all speak this scientific study ease. And that's okay. You know, we're not all scientists, but there's this thinking out there that we are just supposed to trust it, that we are in the hands of doctors who know what they're doing. And for a lot of people, that's okay, but it's not okay for everyone. And so what we really have to figure out how to do is address people's concerns, like Dr. Benjamin was saying, with compassion and, you know, with a care provider that you already know and trust. But that also is challenging because, as we know, doctors are stretched thin and nurses are stretched thin. And so I think the nut that we need to crack is, how do we address people's concerns? How do we build in systems and workshops and programs that make it possible to address people's concerns so that they don't interpret the science is settled as being, go away, we're not going to, you know, we're hiding something, or we want to get rid of this, any perception of a lack of transparency here.
Mm. Ben, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I would agree. I also think there's something going on here that, again, unfortunately, a lot of this stuff feels familiar because, as Amory and I were reporting this series out, You know, the country was looking at a different outbreak, a different epidemic, which is, the measles. And, you know, something that is really missing here, I think, you have to do this work at the ground level, but you also have to have trust in government that is built through clear communication. And I think that there's been a real failure at the federal level of clear communication throughout the pandemic. But there was also during the measles outbreak, you had the president of the United States suggesting that, the measles vaccine that millions of people get might give you autism. And then you had him walk that back and say, no, everybody has to get the MMR vaccine. So I think there's also an issue of trusting government at the federal level that has just not been built over the last however long here. And that's a huge issue, too.
So, Dr. Benjamin, I think that what Ben and Amory are saying is right, that trust has to be built, and it can't be done even in a year, especially trust in major systems. And this system that we're talking about in this case, as Ben said, is the federal government. Now, that runs headlong, though, into the emergency of this pandemic, right? So what would you say then, though, okay, right now, if you could change, what would you change now in order to start, at least laying the foundation of greater trust?
We have to reach out to more trusted messengers. That's very important. Mikhail, you featured earlier, is a trusted messenger in the community. And we have to engage more and more of those trusted messengers. I remember during the HIV/AIDS epidemic, we reached out to barbers and beauticians to make sure that we could deal with misinformation and mistrust in the community, because people hang out in barbershops and they go to beauty salons. Now, we're not doing that right now because we're, staying at home, but we need to find trusted messengers that can communicate effectively to people, whether they're athletes or music performers or Mrs. Jones. There's always a Mrs. Jones in the community who everybody trusts. Everybody knows who she is. And we need to reach out to those people, make sure they're well informed and hopefully trusting of the information. And like Mikhail, they can reach out to their family and friends and neighbors to share this information and encourage people to get vaccinated. Mm.
So Ben and Amory, let me offer this to both of you. I do think it's important on any question regarding science or medicine to first not meet people's questions with animosity, right? And I know that a lot of people have had that experience, say in doctors' offices, because that's the fastest way to destroy trust. But on the other hand, as you all know, over the past many years, there have been people who have been deliberately putting misinformation out there on purpose, who know that some refuted studies, they're still putting them out there, or others who, there's been a tone of saying, well, if you're anti-vaccination, then that you're selfish, right? You refuse to listen to science, and you're actually a danger to everyone else. I mean, the tone has been extremely, I don't know what the right word is, but divided, right? So, but fear is on both sides here. Isn't the concern that people have regarding those who are vaccine hesitant also equally valid? Ben, I'm going to toss that one to you.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that struck me as Dr. Benjamin was talking about sort of community leaders and community connectors and the importance of them being able to talk to their community is now we have platforms that have communities that are beyond local, that are global, that are national. And those communities are built around community connectors and community communicators who are spreading this misinformation. And I think that's one of the big, big issues here is we have technology platforms that spread and reward misinformation. And that's really one of the big issues that we're dealing with as well.
Yeah. So one more question for both of you about how people process information. Because, look, I think there are a lot of people who have vaccine hesitancy or concerns about vaccines because maybe they don't understand the science or their questions aren't being answered. But those very same people might happily take other injections that they get from the doctor's office, or they might take medication every single day that they also don't know how it works, right? But but they take it, okay?
Yep.
So there's inconsistency in the distrust of medicine or science. What is it about vaccines that seems to produce so much pushback?
Well, there's a real polarization. I mean, there really has not been room for any kind of middle ground. You know, we referred in our series to, we pointed out that the term anti-vax is not a welcome term by all people who don't want to give their children or themselves every vaccine that's out there on the market. There is the term selective vaccinator that some people prefer. And that's because they want to give their child a vaccine for meningitis. They don't want to give their child a vaccine for chickenpox because they say, you know, I had chickenpox, I was fine, it's going to be fine. And so this lack of a middle ground and the idea that you are either on board for all of the vaccines or you are just labeled an anti-vaxxer, I think has only made people dig their heels in more and turn to other sources of information on the internet, which, as you said, there are people intentionally creating and trying to spread misinformation. And as Ben said, there are platforms that make that easier. But I also think there are a lot of people out there who just have genuine questions, and they want to be able to ask those questions without having an anti-vax label slapped on them by their friends, their loved ones, and their doctor, especially. So this lack of a middle ground and this lack of a safe space to ask any kind of questions or to make any kind of choice that isn't the "I will get every single vaccine on schedule" is, I think, only really making things worse.
There's another factor too, which is that vaccines, if they work, are effectively magic. I mean, you take a vaccine, as a kid, you take a vaccine for MMR, and if enough kids do this for the measles, mumps, rubella vaccines, if enough kids take these vaccines, they never see in their lifetimes any of those diseases. And I think, you know, Paul Offit, the doctor who's developed a vaccine, who we spoke to in our series and who I think we're going to hear from later, he talked about this, vaccines being a victim of their own success. A lot of this stuff you used to see, you know, smallpox, 60% of the population would get smallpox when it came around, and people would have scars on their faces. And a lot of one of the interesting things here is that if a vaccine works, you never see the reason why you took it in the first place. And I think we forget about that. And that's a real issue too.
I think that this is also true about people's experience of the pandemic, right? If they see it in their own lives or in their family or social circles, it's a very human quality to take it more seriously then, the closer it is to you, right? And the fact, your point's well taken, Ben, the fact that so many diseases have been rendered roughly invisible by vaccines actually makes the the next vaccine that much harder to convince people to take. Dr. Benjamin, did you want to respond to that?
Yeah, there's no question that this whole issue of people who have not yet seen COVID and experienced COVID or don't know anyone who's had COVID are much more likely to believe that the disease is as serious as we know it is. And so that makes a big difference. And to the extent that we can avoid judgmental language when talking to people, the medical encounter in this country is you make an appointment, you come in, you see the provider, and they offer you their advice. And if you don't take their advice, it really isn't often a consultative engagement. And if we told people, yes, I want you to come in today and I want you to get your COVID vaccine, and you talk with them about it, and if they're a little uncomfortable getting it, and you say, well, look, here's the information, you go home and we'll talk about it tomorrow, I suspect we have a lot bigger take-up than we're getting today. But that's not the way we do it. We say, come in, line up. If you don't get it, you know, there's this kind of experience where people don't feel they can come back. And we have to make the return visit welcoming, even if you have to return for your first vaccination.
Well, we're just a couple of minutes off from our next break here. And Ben and Amory, I wanted to just circle back to the proliferation of misinformation and how that's been put on steroids by social media. That was part of your investigation in infectious. And Ben, I mean, you even spoke to Facebook about this. Does Facebook actually believe it bears any responsibility to proliferate good information over bad?
I mean, I would say that they, you know, we talked to them. We tried to, you know, get their, you know, their representative who spoke with us to kind of take responsibility for having an impact here. And you know, she didn't fully do that. But the I think that they are working, you know, Facebook has changed its policy several times around this, and they are working to surface better information, more fact-based information on the platform. But just today I was looking and I found a, you know, I found a, an anti-vaccine group on Facebook very easily, you know, within about 20 seconds. I, you know, searched for COVID vaccine and I found a Facebook group that was putting out misinformation, you know, associating the vaccine and COVID with 5G cell towers and stuff like this, that it's been thoroughly debunked. Mm. So I think it's tricky. They're working on it, but they certainly haven't solved it. And the problems are there.
Well, we are talking this hour about how to build trust around the COVID vaccines. I'm joined by Dr. Georges Benjamin and by Ben Brock Johnson and Amory Sievertson. And we're getting some responses online here. Richard Belling says, nope, way too many unanswered questions and not nearly enough time to test long-term healthcare effects. You want to be a guinea pig? Knock your socks off. Whereas Alexandra Marinis says, I'll be in line the moment it's available for the general population. We'll be back with more. This is On Point.
A gruesome scandal at the nation's most prestigious university shines a light on a macabre and lucrative world of buying and selling human remains.
Human body parts taken by a manager at the Harvard Medical School morgue and then sold to customers online.
So my first skull is right there on the top shelf. That's my first and my favorite.
I'm reporter Allie Jarmani, and this story raises some tough questions. How should we treat the dead? And who gets to decide?
There should be some middle ground where we treat deceased tissues differently than we treat old refrigerators.
This is Postmortem, The Stolen Bodies of Harvard, a new season of WBUR's Last Scene. Listen and follow Last Scene wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Tomorrow on the show, we are going to be discussing the warning that was put out by all 10 living former secretaries of defense for the United States. They wrote an op-ed in the Washington Post about the consequences for American democracy of President Trump refusing to concede and even continuing to try to overturn the outcome of the 2020 election. We'll be joined by former Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel to talk about it. So what questions do you have for Secretary Hagel? What concerns do you have for the future of American democracy? Call us at 617-353-0683. That's 617-353-0683. Today, we are talking about how to build trust in COVID vaccines and vaccinations. And I'm joined by Ben Brock Johnson and Amory Sievertson. They are co-hosts of Endless Thread, a podcast from our home station, WBUR, and Reddit. In 2019, they produced a 5-part series about vaccine hesitancy called Infectious. It won a National Edward R. Murrow Award for Best News Series. I'm also joined by Dr. Georges Benjamin, Executive Director of the American Public Health Association. And before we move forward into sort of more concrete actions to take regarding building trust, Dr. Benjamin, I can't quite step fully away from the import of social media in modern America regarding vaccine hesitancy. Because, you know, as Ben and Amory have been describing, concerns about vaccination are pretty much as old as vaccines themselves as a public health tool. But now, I mean, you talked earlier about getting good information out there from trusted sources. But quite frankly, people are living in their own information bubbles, right? And because of cable TV, because of social media, I'm not sure any amount of good information can overcome, you know, what Ben was talking about, that still just takes a couple of clicks on Facebook, and you're surfacing those old conspiracy theories about vaccination.
Well, there's no question about that. But, you know, but the problem has been is we really don't invade that world. You know, we stay in our silos. And to the extent that we can get people to be part of those discussions, after all, we know that some of the disinformation groups purposely enter the pro-vaccine community with misinformation all the time. But we have not done the converse as assertively as we need to do to bring the facts. And I've always believed that the best way to deal with misinformation is with the facts. And the more you can do that, the more people at least will hear that information. It has to be repetitive. It has to come from multiple different voices, but you can turn it around. But you're right. Once people are fixed on a concept, it is much harder to turn it around. Mm.
Well, so countering misinformation with the facts. Let's do a little bit of that right now, because we've been mentioning Paul Offit's name quite a bit during this hour. He is the director of the Vaccine Education Center at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. Also, he's on the FDA Vaccine Advisory Committee, which approved that emergency use authorization for both the Moderna and Pfizer COVID vaccines. So we called him up and asked him about a few of the common concerns people have been sharing about COVID-19 vaccines and wanted to have him address those concerns. So here's the first one. Concern number one, that the vaccines are not safe because their development was rushed.
The truth is that when you do trials like Moderna's trial, which was a 30,000-person trial, or Pfizer's trial, which was a 44,000-person trial, that's as big as any vaccine trials. And the length of time that we look at safety issues, which in this case is 2 months after the first and second dose, that's what we do for any vaccine, which is to say you're going to pick up a serious adverse event usually within 6 weeks of a dose.
Concern number two, side effects of COVID vaccines are worse than the virus itself.
Well, it does have a somewhat difficult side effect profile. It's in as many as 50% of people, especially those less than 55, especially after the second dose, can have fatigue, headache, fever, joint pain. But, you know, this is your immune response being activated. I mean, what this is your immune system working. I wish we had a better phrase for this. It seems like our immune system needs a better public relations team to try and get people to appreciate it more.
Concern number three, does the vaccine contain live virus?
No, so these are both Pfizer and Moderna's are messenger RNA vaccines. So what you're being inoculated with was a small fragment of RNA, which then enters your cell cytoplasm. It never enters the nucleus where DNA resides. It just enters the cytoplasm, the area outside the nucleus, where then it is translated to a protein, in this case, the coronavirus spike protein. So your body actually makes the coronavirus spike protein. Then your body makes an immune response to that protein. That's the way this works.
And concern number four, could the vaccine alter your DNA?
It cannot alter your DNA for several reasons. First of all, messenger RNA does not have the nuclear access signal that allows it to actually cross the nuclear membrane and enter the area where DNA resides. Two, it's RNA, so it would have to be reverse transcribed to DNA, which requires the enzyme reverse transcriptase, which this vaccine also does not have. There is no way this vaccine can integrate into DNA. You have a better chance of getting this vaccine and developing X-ray vision than you have of this vaccine's changing your DNA.
And finally, concern number five, which we heard Miguel Rodriguez talk about at the very, very top of the show. He'd been hearing it from people in Camden, New Jersey. Could people still get the virus even after vaccination? So maybe they shouldn't even bother.
Well, you know from the two trials that if you've gotten this vaccine, you have a 95% chance of not getting the disease associated with this virus. It's remarkably effective. And knowing that this virus, if you've never been infected before, can cause you to suffer or be hospitalized or die, I do not see why any rational person would not choose to get this vaccine.
So that's Paul Offit. He is the director of the Vaccine Education Center at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia and on the FDA's Vaccine Advisory Committee. So, Amory Sievertson, not all of us get a chance to call up Paul Offit, right, and say, here's my questions about vaccines, allay my concerns. Hopefully listening to him on Point might have helped a few people. But in your series, Infectious, you explored places and ways in which people are trying to get better information out to folks. Can you tell us a little bit about that? I think you focused on some efforts going on in Oregon.
Yes. In the Portland area of Oregon, there is a woman named Nadine Gartner who started an organization called Boost Oregon. And this was born out of her own experience. When she was becoming a mother for the first time, her group of friends started asking questions about her own vaccine plan. And she said, well, I was just planning on doing what the pediatrician said, you know, getting all of the vaccines on schedule. And her friends, who she told us were, you know, educated, rational people, were posing questions about vaccines and were not so sure that they were going to follow that themselves. And so she said, well, if my smart, loving parental friends are concerned about vaccines, maybe there's something here. And she started looking into it. She concluded that she was going to vaccinate her child. And she said, I want to build something that will help parents who were in my position, who are suddenly not so sure what to do. So Boost Oregon runs these workshops that are open to the public. Ben actually went to one when he was out there reporting. It was held in the back of a toy store. So, you know, easy, a pillar of the community. And they had a pediatrician there, and it was a no stupid questions sort of environment. Bring all of your concerns. We will take a couple of hours. We will answer every single question you have. And Ben got a chance to talk to some of the people after the workshop. They didn't want us recording the workshop because they were concerned that it would make the attendees nervous or maybe not feel as willing to ask all the questions they might have. But some people came out of that workshop saying, you know, I went in not sure, and I came out feeling really good about this decision.
Well, we actually have a clip from the series Infectious about exactly what you're talking about, Amory. So this is Autumn, an Oregon mom, and she wasn't vaccinated herself as a child. She chose not to vaccinate her daughter either. And here's what she told Ben after the workshop.
I was totally nervous to come, especially not being vaccinated, my child not being vaccinated. I was really, you know, because there is a lot of strong feelings, I'm strong and I'm willing to stand my ground, but it doesn't mean that it would be comfortable. So I was a little intimidated, but everyone was really welcoming and really kind, and that made it a much more convenient, comfortable environment. I felt like the information gathering was really well done overall.
But Ben, did it change Autumn's mind about vaccinating her kids?
I think it did. And I think we talked to some other folks. We talked to a young woman, who was present for this, and her husband actually, and she was about 8 months pregnant. And both of their families were very anti-vax, very vaccine hesitant. And you know, they came with a lot of questions and had a lot of them answered in this workshop. And I think one of the things that struck me about the workshop was the sort of simplicity and openness of the conversation. You know, the pediatrician who was there explained in the most basic sense, you know, we talk about explain like I'm five, right? Like he explained in the most basic sense how vaccines work. And then he answered any questions that the group had, like, you know, no matter how, you know, based in conspiracy or based in misinformation. And he answered them generously and patiently and thoughtfully. And I think that made a huge impact, because one of the things that we're talking around, I think, is, you know, a long history of, you know, the medical industry and the healthcare industry being very paternalistic. In the way that it deals with, you know, primary child care providers. And we talk about some of the groups online that get together and try to help each other. And these are, you know, described by researchers, feminized groups that are primarily made up of mothers who are trying to get answers and are not getting them in the places that they should when they go to the doctor. And that's part of the issue with the misinformation that's going around. And
it's still
the issue,
there, you know, Ben. It's still, we had to switch pediatricians for exactly that reason. So,
yeah.
I mean, this is a very, very qualified person, excellent doctor, but the paternalism I could not tolerate. Now, listen,
yep.
we Boost Oregon was a really interesting part of your series. So we actually went back to founder Nadine Gartner because they have pivoted to focus on COVID vaccination. And she said they're using the same trust building principles now.
The truth is that fear or hesitancy about vaccines is a feeling. And you can't respond to a feeling with facts. You have to respond with a feeling. And so the first step is to really create an emotional connection with someone. You need to first sit down and really learn what are they nervous about and say, yeah, you know, maybe if it's about the speed of the vaccine, for instance, the speed of the development, say, yeah, I know it's really wild, isn't it, that it's happened this quickly. Well, let's talk about what the process was.
That's Nadine Gartner, the founder of Boost Oregon. Now, Dr. Benjamin, as we sort of round the turn here to the last 4 minutes of the conversation, we've talked a lot about you build trust through community, through good information from trusted members of those communities, right? Through respect, through openness and acknowledgement, through fighting misinformation regular and social media. Also having a government that doesn't politicize issues of public health. So we've got pie in the sky and right down to the ground level. But I did want to, I cannot end this hour without focusing on something in particular. For example, for people of color, it's not that it's misinformation that is driving their lack of trust of the healthcare system, right? It might be like how they were treated at the doctor's office just yesterday, or, you know, remembering that their uncle or grandfather was deliberately infected with syphilis during Tuskegee. I mean, like that historical memory is real. And how do we build trust with those communities?
Well, I do. I think we have to, first of all, get the history and just to make one slight correction. Remember, they were not infected with syphilis. They were fit. They were not treated once a treatment became available for syphilis.
Yes, thank you for that.
But also we'll point out that are we going to repeat that terrible, terrible tragedy? Because right now we have a disease that disproportionately impacts communities of color. So shouldn't we make sure that we make sure the vaccine is available to those communities so we don't repeat what happened in Tuskegee, meaning that not treating people when an effective preventive therapy comes available. But I also think you're right. Racism, discrimination, mistreatment occurs today. And while people may not remember the Tuskegee experience because none of us were around, they do remember how they were treated yesterday when they went into the doctor's office. They do remember how they were treated yesterday when they needed to have a service provided and someone did not treat them with the respect that they deserved. And people see that through the lens in which they experience things. And if they see that through the lens of racism and discrimination, why in the world would they trust us? So they also have to see not only trusted messengers, but they need to see messengers that look like them and messengers that they think have had the same life experiences that they have as part of the trust building experience.
Yeah. And I also hope, just to come full circle on this, that over time, as more people do receive a COVID vaccine, once we get the distribution problems all ironed out, that, again, that can be a positive kind of viral information, right? That it's working for folks. It's keeping them healthy. And that might build trust amongst others who have a little bit of or a lot of hesitancy around COVID vaccines.
Well,
Well, we are out of time, unfortunately. So Dr. Georges Benjamin, Executive Director of the American Public Health Association, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Megan.
And Ben Brock Johnson and Amory Sievertson, co-hosts of Endless Thread, a podcast from our home station here at WBUR and Reddit. They did a 5-part award-winning series called Infectious. Ben, thank you so much.
Thank you, Meghna, and thank you, Dr. Benjamin. This was fun.
And Amory, thank you so much as well.
Thank you, Meghna. Thank you, everyone. Our pleasure.
And we've got a link to Infectious, the series, at onpointradio.org. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point. Thank you.
Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. Listen on for a preview of one of the episodes featuring Susan Fournier, Alan Questrom Professor, and Dean.
So let's start this conversation with the title of the show, Is Business Broken? It's a provocative title and a question. Where did this come from? Why that question now?
We're in a big cultural moment where capitalism, business, market systems are really being scrutinized and debated, and the role of business with it. So I think the question is just on the table. It's on people's minds. It's in the news media. It's in conversations. I think there are growing voices, loud voices, especially among young people who seem increasingly to believe that business and maybe capitalism with it are harmful and create rather than solve problems for society. And what we do seem to hear are those loud voices. And they are very black and white. There are protagonists and the antagonists and the pros and the cons. And there's really no middle discussion. It's sort of like people for and against, and it's loud.
Right. For and against DEI, for instance, right? A battle at play.
Right.
The way you describe it and the way you describe the polarization, it makes it feel like very much of the digital age, right? It feels very much of today. Some of those arguments have been around, though, right? Is this criticism of business and this question, is business broken, is that a new question?
You are so right. It is not a new question. Schumpeter, he was a professor at Harvard, and he's also maybe one of the most influential political economists of the early 20th century. He called for the death of capitalism, the death of business, 100 years ago.
Okay. Wow.
And when he critiqued way back then, he said the very successes of capitalism would bring about its downfall because it would create values hostile to capitalism, and that this would particularly take hold among intellectuals who were critiquing. So there's a lot of that same kind of dynamic happening today, and that's 100 years old. But yeah, we've seen this kind of cultural fervor playbook many times in the past, often precipitated by big crises.
Find the full episode by searching for Is Business Broken wherever you listen to podcasts, and learn more about the Mehrotra Institute for Business, Markets, and Society at ibms.bu.edu.